mean by that is, what I'm curious today is to know your perspective, your individual perspective about the issues we talk about today. You know, there are times when people want to put on their community leader hat and say, I think everybody, say, in the Portland metro area or Oregon might think this way about this issue, or their business hat, say, I think everybody in my business community would think this way or that. What I want to learn today is what you individually think, what you personally experience, feel, what your individual opinions are on issues. So pretty basic stuff. I'd like to go around the table quickly and just do some quick group introductions. Because you do have one thing in common, that's all that you're all EV owners, own electric vehicles. I would like to know your name, where about in the community you live, and about your vehicle, your EV, so what kind it is, and about how many miles you've driven on it, and then I'm going to have some follow-up questions around that issue during the group. Donald, why don't we start with you, and we'll just go around the table.
Sure, my name is Don. I'm a 2011 electric Leaf. I have about 48,000 miles on it. I live out on Sauvie Island. It's my daily driver.
Oh, great. Welcome. Don, everybody else, if you could turn your name tints towards me, that would be helpful so I can see it. Appreciate it. Brian.
Brian Lockhart. I live in Northeast Portland. Work in Hillsboro. I've got a 2011 Nissan Leaf with about 41,000 miles on it.
Okay. Don, Brian, others, about how many miles do you drive in your EV a day?
About 40.
40?
About 45
to 50. Okay, 45 to 50. Great, thanks. All right.
Hi, my name is Bob. I live in Northeast as well. I'm self-employed. I drive a 2013 Leaf, and I've had it since March of last year, and there's about 8,000 miles on it. And I'd say I drive maybe 15 to 20 miles a day on it.
Okay. Welcome, Robert. Thanks for coming. And Bob. You go by Bob. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll try to remember that. Steven.
Yeah. I live in Beaverton. I also have a Leaf. Got mine a year ago, March. I have 13,000 plus miles. And I drive anywhere between 10 and 60 miles. Just really varies for me.
Okay. Did you say how many miles you have on it now?
13,000.
13,000. Great. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming down.
Yeah.
Molly. I live in Selwood. Work. Northwest, 2013 Leaf that I got in February with just under 5,000 miles. Probably less than 10 a day, actually.
Okay.
Generally, sometimes more, but.
All right. Great. Welcome.
Hi, Rick. I live in Cedar Hills, west side. I have a 2011 Nissan Leaf with 14,000 miles. I only drive on average about 14 miles a week, and then commute 2 days a week, which is about 10 miles when I commute.
Mm-hmm. All right. Great. Thanks, Rick. So our two Ricks are right next to each other. It's Rick K and Rick B.
Rick Brown. I live close in Southwest, right by OHSU. I guess I'm the oddball here. I have a Think City EV with a bit over 9,000 miles on it. I'd say my average daily mileage is about 15, but it varies from zero to 50 or more.
Okay, great. Welcome.
My name is Adua. I live in Tualatin, and I have a 2013 Prius plug-in, and I have about 25,000 miles on it. Mm-hmm. I've had for about a year and 3 months now, so right. 21,000.
Okay. And how many miles a day do you commute with your BEV?
Oh, it depends, but generally about 30. At least 35 miles a day.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
I'm Bridget. I'm Beaverton, and I have a 2011 Nissan Leaf, and I commute anywhere from about 45 miles during the school year to anywhere from 10 to 50 in the summer.
Okay. Are you a teacher?
No, but my kids are in a charter school.
Okay. So going back and forth. Mm-hmm. Great. Welcome.
Thanks.
John.
My name is John Christian. I live in Beaverton. I'm on my second Nissan Leaf. I've had it since June. So my first Leaf and my second Leaf together, I get about 38,000 miles.
Okay. So you a two-Leaf household, and you upgrade to the newest one?
Interesting story. There's 9 Leafs in my extended family in the Portland area. My wife has one, my son has one, my daughter has one, my brother-in-law has one, my sister-in-law has one, their son has one, my mother-in-law has one. So there's a bunch.
All right. Hope you got a sales commission.
Yeah, I think I made $50 on that.
All right, gang, we're going to have some conversations about EVs and some related issues today. And I gave you those, or I had Irene give you those exercises up front. And if you had a chance to fill them out, fabulous. I'll be curious to read them. If you didn't, still take them out. I wanted to at least prompt you with some ideas and some thinking. So take that packet out. It's labeled WE1, 2, 3, and 4. Won't have a chance to get to everybody's personal story, but at least to hear a couple of them. Brian, why don't we start with you? Why did you get an EV?
Well, I've always been interested, not always, but ever since I knew there were electric vehicles, I've been interested in them. And I used to go to the electric vehicle drag races down on whatever that is, NATO Parkway, way back when, and thought, I would build one of those someday. And I never got around to building it, and it was going to be way too much work. So when I heard Nissan was going to come out with an electric vehicle, I thought, all right, I'll try that. And I
What's attractive to you about it?
The environmental aspect. To me, I believe that it probably does have a lower carbon footprint than other vehicles, and I just like the idea of it.
Okay. You believe probably it does?
Well, I haven't seen any calculations on what the overall manufacturing carbon footprint is and everything, but I'm pretty sure it's a good way to go.
Okay. Steven, why do you get an EV?
It's cheap, and it's cool, and it's the nicest car I've ever owned, and I got it for a steal.
So tell me about those two parts, a cool and nicest car you've ever owned.
Yeah.
How is it cool?
Well, I call it, my Leaf is my Tesla starter car. So, it's fast because of the battery and no torque, or instant torque, I should say. I don't even think a Tesla has a heated steering wheel. I checked with some Tesla owners, they don't have that feature. So, and I just love not getting gas. I had to get gas in my wife's car the other day, and I just was like, it's almost $4 a gallon. I don't even pay attention to that anymore. It's just nice to just not even think about it.
Bridget, what about you?
Pretty much everything that was said, but my husband is very, really adamant about getting it. He wanted to move, help push the cause forward.
Okay.
He wanted to be in early. He wanted to help, keep momentum up for it. So
what's the cause?
The cause to get rid of oil and gas and to, to help contribute to a cleaner environment for our children. So,
do you feel it does that?
I do. I also come from a very a big cycling family. So my brother, he builds bicycles, he owns his own business, and so everybody in my extended family is a cyclist. So the contributions to them as well, the less smell, it's sort of our...
Okay.
We're not cyclists, but that's how we're doing it.
Rick Kay, when you're driving around, you don't put a lot of miles on your vehicle, but say you pull in at the grocery store or you go to the movie theater, what do people say?
Well, I've been actually using the extended range fast chargers a lot, even though not many trips, and you always get somebody coming up asking about the car, and I think some nodding heads here, you invariably have to give the talk.
Yeah.
And
what's your talk? What's your elevator pitch, so to speak?
Yeah, well, they want to know, always the first question, how far can you go without plugging in? And you have to explain, it depends on how empty the battery is and whether you need to be 100% full or not, but they start to get it, and then quickly move on to, how cool it is. They like the idea, and usually it seems like you make a convert every time, or get them thinking about it. I knew I didn't drive much before electric cars came out, and it seemed like any of them would have been a good fit for me. I think I didn't need a lot of range to get my usual work done, but I chose the Leaf as sort of a production car. I knew I wasn't a tinkerer that I could, get one out of a kit, But I've kind of been waiting since my youth. It always was like 5 years away, an electric car. and finally here was a production model I could get. And I really like the lack of maintenance in an electric car. That really hits home. No oil changes, no transmission fluid to suddenly be leaking out, and all those things that make a combustion car kind of nerve-wracking. I feel immediately felt very free in the electric car. There's really nothing to go wrong. I just go.
Molly Hall, how has your experience been going as an EV owner?
It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. I mean, just, I love driving around and passing gas stations and being like, nope. You know, like that makes me smile every time I pass one. I do actually really enjoy getting stopped, you know, by people who ask me whenever I'm charging. Or sometimes just even pulling into a parking space or whatever, they're like, oh, is that an electric car? And
did you have any trepidations when you bought your electric vehicle?
I did not.
Yeah. No. Have you had any, it sounds like things are going great for them. Is there any things that you're surprised about that maybe even if it didn't work out like you thought it would, or just things you hadn't thought about that your experience has been like since an EV owner?
There have been a few inconvenient things about it. Not enough that it really detracts from my overall satisfaction, but just occasionally with going to a charger where I want to use a fast charger and then it's not actually operational, and there are, you know, the other ones
like it's broken
away.
Or
yeah, it's broken, and it hasn't been updated in like a plug share app, which is what I use. I don't know what other people use, and so you don't know that it's broken and you've planned on that. You know, I was late to a business meeting because I planned. I was like, oh, 45 minutes, I'll pop in and use the quick charger. And I had to sit there waiting on the slower, like, level 2 charger to get to a meeting. And so, like, there's been a few times where that's been a little bit frustrating, but, yeah, overall.
Okay. Donald, how has your experience been so far? Any surprises? Any downsides?
No. I would say there are no real surprises. I can't think of a downside other than, you know, you actually start thinking about where you're going to drive. Like you said, I got to make sure that I can, you know, accomplish what I'm trying to do, and if I need to make any stops. But I think it's just made me more conscious. Like, do I really need to do all this driving? Mm-hmm. Can I accomplish it in not driving as far as I may have? And so I would think maybe it's shortened. You know, if I had a car with an internal combustion engine, I think I probably would have driven more. I think it's actually a good thing just to, you know, moderate my driving.
How do you manage that? Is there anything that you do? You say you have to be thoughtful. Is there anything?
I just be more thoughtful.
What does that mean?
About it.
How are you more thoughtful?
Just more thoughtful. Do I just, geez, I could probably drive a shorter distance to get what I need. I may spend a little bit more for whatever it is I'm trying to buy. Mm-hmm. Also, it makes me think about more, you know, trying to just buy things more locally. Rather than going to like the big box stores or something, so just, you know, be a little more economical about my time. And
Bob,
yeah,
any pleasant or not so pleasant surprises about being an EV owner?
I guess I knew that the range on the vehicle was limited, but I didn't quite realize how that would impact me, especially since I can't charge at home. I don't have driveway space, and it's impractical to run an extension cord with the 110 volt line across the sidewalk and to the street. So I'm completely dependent on public charging stations. And the other aspect is sometimes my work takes me out of town, so when that happens, I need to get into my old beat-up Toyota and use that for long-distance trips. But for getting around town, it's fantastic. And I've learned over the last year and a half where I can get a reliably find a spot at a charging station.
How have you managed to be able to do that? I mean, how do you
trial and error? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rick B., how would you describe sort of the state of charging for you? Charging stations I'm thinking about in particular.
Yeah, I charge almost exclusively at home. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, charging station availability, and I can only use level 2, not the rapid charge. That's a little bit of a disappointment. But that's the car, not the charging station. Mm-hmm. There are occasions when I wish that there was a better distribution of charging stations.
Better just to have.
I can think of one occasion this spring, and I was meeting up with some other people for a kind of a. It was birding. And we went further than I anticipated. I think in terms of range awareness rather than range anxiety. This is one occasion where I ended up with some range anxiety. And I was in North Portland, fairly far out, Kelly Point and stuff. And there really wasn't anywhere where I could leave the car, go with it in another vehicle for a while, and then come back. Mm-hmm. There were supposedly some installed at the University of Portland, and they were plug-in. PlugShare told me they weren't functional yet. So it's it's the holes in the map of the distribution. They tend to be concentrated downtown or wherever. It all makes sense that they're where they are, where the people are, but not having some scattered availability in most areas of town that give you a chance to get further out.
What are, John, I seem to have heard from Abdullah, how would you describe the state of charging here in Oregon, the metro area, in your experience, in your life?
Well, I think that if you compare it against other cities, we're one of the top. And so, generally speaking, it's not bad. These days, people are more connected with their handheld devices and their navigational aids. And, you know, on the Leaf, some of the Leafs have a navigational aid that tells you where the nearest charging stations are and the like. And then there's, I think somebody was saying they're using PlugShare, and that's pretty good about telling you where the nearest charging station is, or even a charging location if it's not a regular public charging station. So you get a pretty good deal of awareness there. But I think there's always going to be a little bit of a distance between what we have and where we'd like to be. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to have one just about everywhere you go. I think it'd be fantastic if more employers put in charging stations. But I think in general we're pretty good. And I think, you know, my experience talking to people that have EVs, a huge majority of people are charging at home for 95% to 99% of their charging. So public infrastructure is important if you're, you know, making essentially a non-standard trip, which, you know, we all encounter, but it's not a huge day-to-day factor.
Abdullah?
Everyone here has a fully electric vehicle. Mine, I get about 13 miles on average on pure electricity, then I can always switch over to gas. And the reason I went with a Prius, I actually test drove a Leaf, and I was just about to sign the paperwork. And I thought about it, and I felt that electric vehicles are not fully there yet. I'd eventually like to get a Tesla, but those, you know, are all $60,000 to $70,000 for a Tesla. So I went with the plug-in, and I mean, when I go, like, the 12 miles is perfect for me because I can get a charge at home fully with the level 2. It takes an hour, or on a 110, it takes 3 hours. And I get to work, and I plug in over there, and I get 12 miles. So I technically go on full battery from work and home, or if I need to go shopping, most places are within, you know, 10 miles, so I usually, most of the time I'm on electric, so I end up averaging, when it comes to the fuel and the gas, I end up getting like 90 miles to the gallon, so it works out for me. Mm-hmm. But for charging stations, I don't really rely on public charging stations, just because I can always, like, I've taken my car to California twice, and I got 60 miles to the gallon on the freeway, and you know, just usually charge at home and charge at work. So,
within reason, so we're not going to wish for everything in the world here, but within reason, if you could improve charging here in the metro area or in Oregon, what would be one or two things that come to mind that you would want to see?
They should have one about every two blocks,
yeah,
no matter where you are.
Just density of the...
Just density, yeah. Just density so that you can find a charging station and you have a reasonable walk to where your destination is, whether it be two, three, four blocks or something. But
problem I had, kind of referring to Molly, is that like I used to, at PSU, and I used to go and charge there, two out of their five chargers weren't working on Electric Avenue. I don't know if and you charge there, and again, PlugShare didn't say they were broken, and then you need to go there. It's a total disappointment. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I can rely on gas, but mm-hmm. if I wasn't relying on gas, I'd be in trouble.
How are most of you finding and coordinating charging stations when you need them? Are you going back to the ones you know that are there and work because you learned about it sometime, or anybody using apps to find them? Anybody? Well, how are you finding them?
I use my Blink app a lot, just to find it. But my driving is more habitual, so I pretty well know where everything is. Uh-huh. And if I'm going, and if I know I'm going to need a charging station, I haven't been there. I'll do a little research just to know what's available.
Yeah, I check all the web pages to see what new ones are there. And
which web pages are
there? There's DOE Alternative Energy and Blink and the AeroVironment. The providers, the charge point network, and,
sure.
And so I look periodically. If there's a new one that looks like I might be able to use sometime, I may make a reconnaissance trip to check it out first before I mm-hmm. want to depend on it for a trip.
Molly, what about you?
I use the PlugShare app because I just always use it on my phone, and that tends to be really reliable. It shows all the chargers from various different like AeroVironment and Blink and. The other one, a couple of the other ones, those are the main ones, but that tends to be reliable. I'm in a situation right now where I rely primarily on public charging stations, so I use that a ton. Even though I drive more or less habitually, it's just that sometimes they're not working, and so you have to sit there and look in the reader's comp. I mean, that's one
when
thing
you say they're not working, Molly, things can not work in different ways. Be specific.
Sorry, they're not functional. Like they're out of order, I guess.
Out of order.
There'll be some error message when you pull up, and then you can comment in the app to let other people know that it's not working. But so even a charging station that you know is there, sometimes it's not always, you can't always plan on using it because every single one I've ever used, the quick charge stations, at some point or another has not been functional.
Show of hands for me, who's ever had to, this may be, I'm not sure if this is a silly question or not, but who's ever had to wait for a public charging station?
You mean like behind somebody else?
Yeah.
Almost never.
Almost never, a few of these. Robert, how often does that happen?
Probably, since I use them a lot, probably 10% of the time.
10%, Brian, what about for you-ish?
I don't use them much, but when I have used them, probably... neighborhood of 10%.
Okay. Well, is for everybody, but because you are more reliant on public charging stations, it sounds like if you could reserve a charging station ahead of time, would that be something of interest to you? Or
oh, sure, yeah, absolutely.
Would you pay for that? How would you expect to pay for that, or how would in what manner do you think would make sense for you?
Well, the thing is, the Blink chargers, I think AeroVironment now charges $750 for their for the electric highway, whatever they call it, per charge $750 unless you get a membership. And Blink for their fast charger is $5. So, to be honest, I don't think. Really charge much more than that anyway for the privilege of just making a reservation. I think that should come free. And but maybe if you don't show up for your reservation, there could be a penalty or something.
Okay. Others, would anybody else be interested in being able to reserve a charging station?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah, I mean, my perfect example is I do go up to the gorge and drive up to the Dalles, and I'd like to know when I get to the Aerovion charging station in the Cascade Locks. I know when I'd be there. I'd like to know that it's available.
Okay. There. So, tell me if I get this wrong, you'd feel more comfortable driving to the Dalles, knowing for sure that there's going to be a spot there. If there's not a spot there available for you, that's going to probably have some influence on your decision to go to the Dalles?
Just depends on what time it would be available, just so I can just plan my trip accordingly.
Okay.
Otherwise, I don't want to be, if there's one car ahead of me, that's okay. That's going to be 20, 25 minutes. Well, I can wait, and then I do my turn. But one time I happened to get into the Cascade Locks, and I charged up four Leafs pulled in behind me.
Mm-hmm. So for them, that was a tough go.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to pay for it?
Well, like I said, I already pay, I think, a premium for the air environment, although I do the subscription at $20 a month because I drive it often enough to justify that expense. But I think it should be just kind of built into that price.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What if there was sort of peak times for reserving? Would you be willing to pay get ahead of the line or make sure that spot's reserved for you?
Well, I don't know. Firm believer, first come, first serve. So okay. If I reserve it ahead of time and I'm the first one, then I should be available to me.
Others? This idea of reserving a spot.
I like that. To tell you the truth, everybody's talking about the quick charge. We've never done a quick charge. We've owned the car the whole time, the original owners. I only know where one spot is, and that's way out in Hillsboro. The idea of being able to reserve, for me, a quick charge is more appealing than reserving anything else. I don't know if your question was specific to just a quick charge.
It wasn't necessarily, but you make a distinguish, Bridget.
I would, because I feel like there's, where at least where I am, that I can find a charger anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I rely on my GPS, so I don't know if I'm just... We mostly charge at home, so I don't know if I'm just... I mean, at the grocery store, at the clothing store, at the city hall, everywhere. Mm-hmm. So... I don't know, I guess
I
sort of differ.
Okay. Molly, Steve, anybody else? Go ahead, Bob.
One improvement that would be really nice in the overall, infrastructure or the environment of charging would be for there to be instant feedback on the apps to let you know if a charger is being used.
Okay.
And I know the Blink system does that, but that's only for Blink stuff. It doesn't.
So you could look at the app, you have the office, and you could say that if I understand it correctly, this charging station has been used right now, this one is available.
Right.
Is that what you're asking for?
Mm-hmm. Or if it was like being used and it says how much time is left on the quick charge,
Oh, okay.
Like if there's, if it's 15 minutes left, I can plan it. Okay. If I leave 10 minutes from now and hopefully there's no one there.
And you're still 10 minutes out, so...
Yeah, so it'd work out, so you can kind of work around it.
Okay, Steven?
This is not totally related to what we're talking about, but talking about infrastructure, at least in the world of gas stations, as ubiquitous as they are, they all have the same pump system. You put your credit card in, and you're done. Well, we don't pump our gas in the state anyway, but it's the same system, and I think it's just totally annoying to have this key fob for this one, and have this card, and this one requires $20 on it to make it even work, and this one, I just like screw the whole thing.
Different handles, the one at the PSU now has these two different kinds of handles.
I just think it's a pain in the butt, and I just avoid charging out in public if I can.
I have a number of different questions I want to ask, and I want to get to some of the things that you wrote down as well. With regards to charging, I want to sort of go to a different topic a little bit. How do I sort of phrase this? Batteries can store energy, right? Would you be willing to, if you think about the larger electrical grid, the grid system, batteries can both store power and they can, give power out, of course. I want to talk a little bit about how electric vehicles and the batteries are integrated into the grid. What do you think, or would you be willing or interested, or would you push back on, get your thinking on the flow of control of the charge to your battery at home, let's say, let's focus on home, be sort of interlinked to the overall demands of the grid. So if the grid is in high demand, maybe you get a slower flow. If it's in a low demand, get a higher flow. Perhaps if it's a peak load time, be able to sell the energy back in your battery to the grid. Those sorts of abilities. Has anybody ever considered or thought about those things before? If yes, what have you thought? And if no, sort of what's your sort of gut reaction to that sort of system?
Well, I think like the blink chargers are already something that you can program them to charge on off-peak hours, and it certainly makes sense that, especially if the electrical cost is cheaper, a certain hour to charge, sure, by all means do that, and you might have to pay more if it were during the day. The idea, though, of selling range out of my leaf, I don't know about that, because it doesn't, you know, you could deplete it pretty quick depending on what it's being used for. So I don't know where the economics would play into that to try and where you could, you know, sell your juice.
Okay. And you'd also want to know what detrimental effect it might have on your battery in the long run.
Oh, okay.
So that would be an important factor, I think.
What's the concern, Brian? Help me understand.
Well, we know that these batteries have a finite life, and it's somewhat related to how many times you charge and discharge it, and at what rates. And if I'm going to lose a year's worth of battery life over a period of life of the car, that's going to equate to the sooner that I'm going to have to shell out a bunch of money to replace the battery.
Rick?
Brian basically just made the point I was going to make. I thought about it in particular because I have rooftop solar system. And so a car that could give and take from that system would make it all much more, or reasonably more efficient. My two concerns would be that at the end of it, I want to have an adequate charge to do the driving I want to plan. And I've also been concerned about added cycling and what that would do to the battery life. But nonetheless, assuming those can be addressed, I find it very appealing as a way of making the grid a whole lot smarter. And
take it a little bit further for me. When you say it's appealing, I think I understand some of the things you mean by that, but if you could be specific for me, what's appealing to you?
Well, it would extend the reduction in CO2 emissions from not just the amount of driving that I do, but adding storage to the grid so that at peak times or whatever, the grid can rely on the storage in batteries rather than another coal plant or something as base load.
John?
I think vehicle-to-grid charging infrastructure is important, but I think of it more in terms of, emergency preparedness. I mean, it'd be nice if we, had the option of charging our cars when we could, maybe even with solar, like Rick's saying. And then if there's, a power outage or something, being able to count on your car to kind of back up household current.
So, like a household generator.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but as far as selling it, I think it's a very complex model and does make you nervous if you're kind of essentially selling the gas out of your car. Am I going to get to work in the morning? You got to be a little careful about that whole thing. But given the right options, and but it'd be a really fine-tuned deal. They have my battery power in the late afternoon when they need it for air conditioning or heating or something, and I get it back at 2 a.m. or something, and I'm good to go for the morning. Yeah, that would make sense, but there, I guess it depends on who controls that.
What controls would you need, John?
Full control on when it's taken and what kind of charge I'm left with at a certain time.
So I'm going to make things up. So I'm not sure if this is possible, but just so to understand. If you could say, I'm happy to sell it back to the grid between, say, midnight and 4 in the morning, but only down to 50% of my battery, and then from 4 to 8, it's got to be charging up or I'm not selling it. If you could have that sort of control.
Yeah. I mean, if I could be confident that I'd have a full tank, so to speak, at the start of the day, yeah.
Okay. Molly, any thoughts on this?
I'm just not sure how practical or feasible it is to sell it back. I mean, you're still putting power into the battery and then taking it back. So I'm not really sure I get the point of that. But
okay.
But in terms of, you know, charging more for charging during peak hours or whatever, it seems completely reasonable. You can charge on off hours.
Okay.
And they do that anyway, so that part of it seems fine.
Really?
And I was thinking if I got home around 7 and I have 90% of my battery left, I wouldn't mind selling it back. If it didn't affect my battery, I would sell it back to the grid in the peak hour and then recharge my car, you know, when it's cheaper at night, because it's, what, 9 cents at night or whatever the amount is. So it could be, you know, if I'm home during the day and I have extra battery and I'm going to be home for the rest of the day, I'll sell it during peak hours and gain it back at night.
Steven, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I'm not interested in this idea. I want to keep my... juice.
That's fine.
Whatever it is. And you were talking about emergency preparedness. I don't want my battery drained. If I need to run out, you know, I don't have kids, but, you know, if something happened, there was an emergency in my house, something happened to my dog, and I need to jump in the car, there'd be nothing worse than having it be, you know, a 10-mile range on it or something like that, even if there was a threshold. It just seems like it would have to be a really sweet financial deal for me to even consider this, because it just seems like too much of a hassle.
Isn't that the handout I gave you in the waiting area, the written exercise 2, take that one out for me. I asked you just to make a list. Maybe you had a chance to do it. If you didn't, hopefully you had a chance to at least look at it. Maybe got some ideas flowing in your head. To imagine the car of the future and to make a list of any developments you'd like to see in the next 10 years or so. Maybe they're longer, maybe something more short term. But sort of things. Let's just get a few things on the table. Maybe these are directly related in your mind to an EV, maybe they're not. Maybe it's something broader about cars in general or the vehicle infrastructure, you know, that we have. But what are some things that came to mind for you?
Well, of course, anything that improves battery technology, that makes batteries lighter, more powerful, just to increase the distance.
Okay.
That would be probably number one.
Improve battery power, I assume, parts that charge faster, greater range.
Yeah.
Okay. What else?
Driverless
cars?
Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll hold that thought. We'll probably come back to it, but driverless cars?
Larger. One that's larger.
Larger?
And not so affected by the poor weather. This one falls and stuff like that. The windshield wipers going, I definitely get less miles out of it in the winter.
Okay.
Induction charging in parking spots, or even induction in the highway as you're going down the road, so you just pick up energy as you drive.
So wireless charging?
Wireless charging and right down the middle of the highway.
Okay. Great. Molly?
I mean, I think longer battery, obviously, or longer range on your battery. I mean, even just a backup battery. I don't know how that's even possible, but, like, when I drove a gas-powered vehicle, or, like, you know, I would have a battery, like, with little jumper cables on it. It was so if I ever, like, left my lights on or whatever, I could jumpstart it and in an emergency. But so, for instance, you know, you're planning on a certain amount of mileage and you get to a charging station and it's not functional, and you're like, crap, and you can't get to the next one, then you're kind of screwed. Like, if there's no way to have some kind of a backup to get an extra, like, 10 miles or something for those, like, things. I think, charging stations at gas stations.
Okay.
Like, one or two spots at every gas station. Yeah. And then, you know, like, then you don't even need an app, like, because there's signs on the highway when you're on I-5 that just say, like, gas station, and you know, gas and power.
Okay, great.
How hard is that? You know, they're everywhere.
So. Robert.
Well, what Tesla does, or they're talking about doing, is battery swap stations.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a pretty, and there's a little, I'm sure some of you have seen the video where they show how long it takes to fuel a car at a gas station, and they show that you can swap two batteries in the same amount of time. Of course, that's a whole different system that you'd need to get used to. But that, you know, if there were battery swap stations, you know, everywhere or at every gas station, or maybe not at every gas station, but something close to that density, that would solve the range problem.
Yeah, those are all great ideas. Anybody have ideas that maybe go beyond the scope of specifically EV, so range, or Steve and then Abdullah?
I was thinking smart navigation.
Smart navigation?
Yeah, so basically not just based, you know, off of how much range you have, but what time of the day, depending on traffic. So even if you had a gas-powered car, and, I mean, there is apps, and, like, I have XM in my car. It tells me there is traffic on I-5, but it's never really that accurate. But if I had a driverless, you know, car, it drove for me, and it told me what the best time, as you know, based off traffic, and the best mileage I'd get, that's what I would, you know, it'd be nice to have, okay. Something like that.
Can we come back to that, too, Steve, and get one more in here?
Then. I just had a different power source than batteries.
Okay.
Power source.
So, Abdullah touches on a little bit, and maybe Stephen does as well. Did anybody have anything about connected vehicles? Mm-hmm. If I say connected, well, let me just test this a little bit. If I say connected vehicles, what comes to mind for you?
Awareness.
Awareness? What sort of awareness?
Of the other vehicles around me, where they are, how fast they're going, what direction they're going.
Okay.
Well, adding on to that, yeah, so if, well, what I meant also meant by that is if it was connected, like there's a special lane in the freeway, and you'll say you're going to California, you're not going to be taking the next in the next 50 miles or whatever. If the car drove for you, like when you have a car, my car has radar cruise control, so I don't even have to brake if I'm traveling. Mm-hmm. So I know I save a lot more. I've noticed that I save a lot more on gas or just on battery when I have the car automatically brake for me and measure the distance between me and the other car. Mm-hmm. So if the computer can calculate 1,000 times or a million times faster than we can, mm-hmm. if it drove for us, we'd save a lot more on range. Mm-hmm. If it was connected to the other vehicles around.
Mm-hmm. Bridget, you have a curious look on
no,
your face.
No, sorry, I was just sort of thinking. One of the things that there was a discussion about, but I don't remember the outcome, which is what my expression was. Something about heated seats versus like heating coming out of the vents and a discussion of as to whether if there were heated seats, you wouldn't necessarily need the heat, so then you wouldn't be using as much energy in that
okay.
form.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but...
Okay, good thought. Duo brought up some of the things about connected vehicles. I'd like to get some other reactions. Brian, is this something you've ever thought about before?
Well, only in regards that I've heard that there's some other gas-powered cars, whether or not out there, that have these systems in them already, where mm-hmm. they talk to other vehicles and you know, share information mm-hmm. vehicle-wise. The driver doesn't know what's going on, I guess, but as far as you know, traffic problems and people stopping in front of you and mm-hmm. you know, to try and make it safer and more convenient for you, I mm-hmm. suppose. And that all sounds good. I mean, I think you know, if we keep cramming more people into our cities and everything, then we're going to want the vehicles to take care of that serpentine effect you get on the freeway when it slows down, speeds up, you know, and that's a big waste of energy, and it's annoying, mm-hmm. and it's dangerous, and if we could eliminate that with the cars being connected to each other, mm-hmm. that would be great, mm-hmm. and I'm not too concerned about the government and knowing where I'm driving and how fast I'm driving, but if that's what we're talking about, connected,
That's part of what we're talking about.
Sort of,
yeah.
Sort of sitting there, YouTubing and Facebooking while you're driving. No, I think that's a bigger waste of time. So.
Okay.
Does connectedness have anything to do with the new electronic signs that are popping up that talk about so many minutes out or
That it, potentially, I might get some just sort of spur some thinking. That is a potential outcome where that could even be more efficient if. Abdullah said, he gets the radio on XM radio, it tells him what routes to take, but if vehicles were connected not only to each other, but to sort of the larger infrastructure of the transportation system, perhaps there would be more accurate sort of timing for signs like that, perhaps be able to suggest alternative routes.
I think Google Maps is kind of working towards that. I mean, they also have they're probably one of the most advanced driverless car projects that's out there, and their real-time maps pretty much give you, since they're getting feedback from everybody else who's running the app on their mobile devices, you get a pretty good idea of what traffic conditions are like on the highways.
Stephen?
At least the newer Leafs, we're already experiencing connected cars. It's the telemetrics in the car. We have the app. We can control certain aspects of the car. We can stop and charge. We can put the heater on. And so anything that is powered by electricity, whether it's plugged in or a battery, can have a Wi-Fi signal attached to it. So now you're in the world of the Internet of Things, and now you can have things start talking to each other.
Is that good?
I think so. I'm all for it.
Is there any downsides?
Yeah.
John? John, what's the downside?
I've worked with computers pretty much all my life, and I can tell you they don't always work right. And I would not trust my car to be driven.
So that's the far out extreme. And we can talk about that. So
okay, so that's part of it. The other part of it is I don't think it's a great idea for, I mean, I don't go any place, you know, that's illegal, and I don't, you know, break the speed limit very often. And, you know, I don't do a lot of things that I think the government would pay much attention to, but there is nothing that you could tell me that would convince me that the government should know where I'm at, how fast I'm going, what my travel plans are, any of that kind of stuff. I mean, I can understand it, you know, if you enabled it voluntarily for emergencies or for, you know, criminal activities are going on or, you know, something. But to remove that control and have essentially the government monitoring things through my car, I don't see any advantages there.
There's other reactions to that.
Do you have a smartphone, by the way?
It's
already happened.
Well, not to the degree you'd think, but yeah, I know what you mean.
I trust the government knowing it before I let Nissan know where I am. At least there's some transparency in the government sometimes. Mm-hmm. Nissan could sell it to anybody.
Brian, you said you weren't concerned about it. You've heard John's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't care what they know about me. And, you know, if they want to throw me in jail, all right. Whatever. But, you know, I don't trust them, but I don't think there's a lot of use that they would make out of that information, really. I mean, unless, you know, if I was concocting explosives in my basement, which I probably would, but... no, just kidding. Just kidding, everyone.
Yeah, really.
But, no, I think, of course... You know, we don't know how secure things can be made. We know that how unsecure they can be made, but theoretically, that information could be just shared amongst the vehicles. And you know, I don't know if the government would have a need to know. Mm-hmm. They'd probably like to know, but there's probably not a need for them to know. And I think if the vehicles could chat with each other and make your experience on the road more efficient, more cost-effective, that that'd be a good thing.
So, efficient, cost-effective, I'm going to make a leap. Efficient means get to A to B faster.
Oh, that'd be nice too, yeah.
And cost-effective, use less fuel, use less energy.
Mm-hmm. Safer.
Safer. What will I be...
Well, there is something else that you were talking about connected vehicles and future technologies. I think there is one application where having a more intelligent, you know, car would be helpful, and that is if you had a augmented display on your, essentially a heads-up display on your windshield, mm-hmm. that gave you an augmented reality view of your surroundings, where you could, you know, essentially see information about some of the things that are out in front of you. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's a, you know, a danger, or a, you know, maybe you know, a red indicator around charging spots, you know, when your battery's low, things like that. I mean, I think if you had more information to deal with presented in a more efficient manner, like, you know, on this huge mm-hmm. windshield, you could make user safer. I guess I have a little more faith in myself than I do in the car or the government mm-hmm. running these vehicles. So,
what information? So, John says more information might be good. You may have had some your own thoughts. What information might be helpful for you?
Yeah, the blind spot things. There's always a blind spot here and there. The look ahead. I've seen where they can actually see through the cars ahead of you and warn you of disasters that are coming, and bird's eye view things where you get to see that kind of view of the car.
Is there are those things that you want, Rick? Is there anything else that that you haven't heard of that exists that you could imagine that would be helpful?
I can imagine that I'd want. I haven't really imagined anything beyond what I've already seen like that. Yeah.
But there's a mansion something that they might want, but they're not sure exists yet.
I agree with the like the bird's eye view, because I have almost hit people four times for the exact same reason.
Yeah.
It's because of that, when the windshield, the thicker part right there, and all they have to do is stand on the sidewalk, and as I'm going out to turn and they're walking, the panel blocks their view the whole time, and it's happened to me four times where I've almost hit someone.
Okay.
And so if there was something that could look around that, or that could be repaired. So that's, I don't know if they've fixed it on the newer ones or not, but,
Just regarding what you said earlier, one thing they have made standard in the newer Leafs is heated seats.
In front and back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know about the back.
Yeah,
yeah, there's a heated rear seat, yeah.
Okay,
I loved it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
What about technologies like auto park?
Like the parallel park?
Nice to have.
Yeah. Nice to have?
Yeah.
Has that been implemented pretty well yet? Yeah.
Anybody know?
Cars in the market.
There are some cars out there.
Yeah.
What about just the notion of, let's assume for the sake of, for the next part of the discussion, that it could work. Is that something you're interested in?
Sure.
Be nice.
If it's available without paying more for the car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the camera
I
system
pay
on,
for it.
The camera system on the Leaf almost makes it like an auto park. It's a great camera system I use.
As long as you can override it when you decide you want to be in control, stop the auto park, it would be okay.
My concern with adding more features like that would be the fragility of those features. For instance, we were rear-ended by two cars. And they said that the backup camera was just like solid, like the car crumbled before that backup camera did anything. And I just wonder, adding more pieces of technology, if it would continue to be more strengthened. You know, I've heard a lot of stories about vehicles with turbo and other added benefits, and I know those are engine related, but I'm just talking about adding more gadgets to it, if it then makes it more susceptible to pocketing or something to screw up an entire system and something like that.
Okay. Auto park as a feature, is it? So Abdullah says as long as it doesn't cost more. Ricky said as long as you can turn it off. Others, is it something? Would anybody be willing to pay for it?
I mean, I used to have it. I hardly ever used it. It was useless.
How is it useless, Abdullah?
Because I was just, it took too long. Unless it can park in like 5-10 seconds, it needed to find, first of all, it needed a bigger space. It was on a Lexus. And it needed to have, you know, about a half the space of the car, you know, to do it. I could do it in half the time instead of, you know, waiting for it to do its thing and find the spot.
If I've got half a space ahead, I could park.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad if someone, if they need to use it, you should maybe be on the road if you can't park. If you have that much room, I mean, if it was able to do, you know, a very small spot, I'm all for it, but they're not that, or at the time, they weren't that advanced yet.
Are we talking exclusively parallel parking?
Not necessarily.
Because that's the only application I'm aware of using that.
Yeah, there's no other.
We can dream, Stephen. Do you have a thought that goes beyond parallel parking?
No.
Oh, and they have stacked parking someday.
Yeah. No, stacked parking.
Hover you up to the spot.
That's mechanical, right? Let's jump ahead. Let's jump to the future. Stephen brought it up first, but John mentioned it as well. Driverless cars.
It's not that far away.
Not that far away, Molly, you don't feel like?
No, 2017.
2017 is going to happen. We're all going to have driverless cars in
2017. No, this is actual Google has been driving, has had driverless vehicles driving around like San Francisco and other cities for four or five years without any accidents. And Google actually announced they're doing production cars to like driverless vehicles for production 2017.
What do you think about that, Molly?
Freaks me out a little bit. The rational side of my brain knows it's fine. I mean, they've been literally driving for 5 years or so. I mean, I forget the exact quantity all over, and they've had way less accidents statistically than human drivers. But it's still like somehow just relinquishing that control or thinking about it freaks me out a little bit. Or just like, okay, they'll start doing truckers. Like trucks on the freeway, they'll just be automated trucks, and then what are truck drivers going to do? It's scary to think about what that would do to the economy, mostly for me, like those truck drivers, then what are they going to do?
Okay.
And And that's a huge, or delivery truck drivers, so even just locally, like pizza delivery people, these will just all be automated cars. It's, I don't know.
I don't want to be ageist about it. I think I would have been right there with Molly. But now I'm seeing my parents being sort of housebound because they can't drive. And I'm thinking, gee, now when I get there, cars will drive themselves and I won't be housebound like my 90-year-old parents. So I'm like, yes, let's do it.
I'm super conflicted about it.
Yeah. So.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
When you're 90, they'll have better medical technology and you'll still be able to drive.
Yeah, I won't have to have cataract surgery. I can just have new eyes.
Yeah. Driverless cars.
I never thought about the employment aspect of it until now. But that's just kind of the trend, you know. I mean, technology is supplanting labor. Mm-hmm. It's just how it, you know. There are very few jobs, even up to corporate CEO, that won't be done by either artificial intelligence or some kind of technology. Mm-hmm. And so we really need to figure out other ways of spending our time, I think, than working. You know, maybe between art or music or something. But back on track, I think it's inevitable, and I think it, in the long run, it'll be good for the getting moving people from point A to point B a lot more efficiently without near as much waste.
What waste comes when you say waste? What are you thinking about?
Energy.
Don?
Well, I think I'm fascinated with it. It will happen. I'm using my first taxi ride in an automated car. Should be pretty fun.
Uh-huh. And what pretty fun?
Yeah, it should be just. Well, it'd be intriguing just to say, let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. But and it should be uneventful. But it, you know, there should be a lot of efficiencies introduced with that. From what I've read about the long game is, well, if you have enough automated cars, then that really would negate the need for personal car ownership if there are enough of them out there where you can just pretty much schedule your car. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a lot to be gained. I mean, you're not taking up, you don't have to allocate space for your own car, you don't have to worry about buying one, servicing.
Yep, absolutely.
There's a lot of things that could be very positive about that. So.
Okay.
Abdul?
I mean, it's pretty cool, if you can like schedule your car and come pick you up. And you know, and then the other point I want to touch on is, you know, people always come and tell you they're worried about privacy, but regardless of whether, you know, a car is going to drive itself, you know, or, you know, it's going to be connected, you know, in a few years they already have automatic license plate readers, and like Portland police cars now, some of them have these cameras on there that will be scanning every single car around them, and that's just the beginning of it. In the future, it's going to probably be electronic license plates, you know, or a chip in each license plate where you'll always be scanned, or the government or whoever will know where you're going. So when people worry about privacy with your phone or with your things, it shouldn't matter to reason when it comes to the future.
Yeah, as Steve just said, I want to give Rick a chance. Driverless cars, Rick?
I think when it's fully implemented, it's the transition where you've got a mix, and the technology isn't perfect. That makes me a little uneasy, but I think the point about getting to the point where you don't have to have personal cars, that's a real important part of the goal, and it makes a lot of sense to me.
Makes sense. What, does anybody... John, you're in the center. I want to... What do you think, John?
Well, having taken advantage of public transportation over the years, I can tell you I don't think I'd want a car that was part of the public transportation system. You don't know who's been in there, or what they've been doing, or what kind of mess they've left behind. I mean, there is a way I like to have my stuff laid out or available, and you know, I want the freedom to go when I want to, not when, you know, okay, waiting for some car to show up in some state of, you know, disrepair or functionality. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. Maybe I, you know, want to, you know, go someplace nice or go to a business meeting or something, and the car is a reflection of you to a degree, so... There's a lot of things that I wouldn't like about, you know, having it as an option for public transportation is something that's interesting, but, you know, I don't think I would give up owning a car.
Okay. Stephen and then Rick.
For me, the big issue is safety and efficiency, not efficiency in CO2 stuff, efficiency in time. I'm sure everyone here thinks they're all like the best drivers around, so we can all pretend like we're the best. Everyone else in Portland pretty much is like the worst drivers right. I've ever seen in the various states that I've lived in. And it's human error and it's distractibility, it's distracted driving. And so if there was a connected system where every car or most of the cars were aware of each other, there would be no traffic jams. There would be no reason why, you know, you say, why are all the brakes, why is everyone on the brakes? And there's nothing happening. That would completely go away. And we would be able to get places so much faster without the human emotions and all that kind of stuff getting in the way.
Rick, you wanted to jump in?
I just need to confess that part of the appeal of the this future condition where we don't own our own cars and so forth is that I don't really expect to see it in my lifetime. And I'll confess to having a kind of an attachment to
having
my own vehicle and the way I want it.
We'll move on to some other topics in a second, but I want to just test the idea. I mean, does anybody feel like, but I want to be able to drive. I like driving.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. Yeah. I mean, it kind of gets down to a personal freedom issue. The driverless cars, the connected cars, is going to erode your personal freedoms in that regard. And so it's going to get to the point where you can't just go where you want to go.
Yeah, I like going places, but I don't know if I really care about driving that much, per se.
Okay.
I mean, the way I feel about it is, you know, personally, if there was a driverless car tomorrow, I don't think I'd get it. But the technology, you know, being connected, like on the side streets or in downtown Portland, I wouldn't want the car to drive me because what if the computer makes an error? But it'd be nice to have a car that, okay, I get on the freeway, it's going to take me, as soon as I stop at that light during traffic hour, it's going to take over from the minute I get on the freeway to the minute I get off, and then once I get off, it goes into manual.
Oh, okay.
You know, because just I can't see the car being as effective ever on the side roads. I mean, at least not right now or the next, even 2017. Google doing that, I don't think it's going to be as effective at all.
And long distance driving is boring, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point. Like, if I'm driving from here to Seattle and I'm just sitting there, I'd rather read a book instead of, just holding the steering wheel. But if I'm on the side roads or on, like, in downtown Seattle, I'd be more comfortable navigating myself instead of being liable for a car making a mistake that I might not do.
Okay. Well, I get last word on this, and we'll change to
different topic. I don't know. I do have this tendency to, like, not trust a car to drive itself, because that's scary. It's going fast. You're like, really? I'm going to let something else control that? But the factual reality is that it is safer. I mean, these Google cars have been driving around San Francisco. They've never hit a pedestrian. They've never even had a vehicular accident. They've never rear-ended anybody. They've never, like, nothing. And that's amazing, you know? Or just even, like, I drive with my boss at work, and he... is always on his phone or, like, reading his emails. Like, sitting there reading his emails while he's driving, and I'm, like, so anxious, and yet don't really feel like I can be like, hey, put that thing away. Like, you're going to kill me. But then he buys this new car, and we're out driving to a meeting, and the car literally has saved me 3 times because it braked itself when he was sitting there looking at his email. I kid you not, and he's like, oh, that's so cool, I didn't even press the brake. Like, it totally depressed away from my foot, and I'm just like, oh my god, like, you know? And so it's mixed emotions. Like, yeah, there is this element of, like you want to believe that, like, oh, I'm the best driver, like, I don't want to relinquish control, but it'd be really great. No, but the reality is, I don't know, it would be a lot safer if you just literally had nobody owned a car. Think about how many fewer cars would be in production. Like, I drive my car half an hour a day, and I own it 23 other hours of the day, and it's just sitting there, and same with, like, most other people. But if you just had a number of them, and they cycle through, like, you know, getting cleaned every couple of hours, whatever, they go in and somebody details it or whatever, and you just pull up an app that says, hey, it's like a taxi, and it just comes, picks you up, takes you where you want to go. There's no parking lots, there's no, you know, meter maids, there's no, you know, you have more parks, you have more buildings, higher density, fewer cars, less congestion. It's kind of miraculous. Slightly terrifying. Yeah. But also, I don't know, miraculous.
Yeah. Joe just brought up some questions, some good ones here. I'm going to actually try to go through them a little bit. If you could buy a fully connected car, would you buy the first one? Who's the early adopter here in this room? Or what would you, maybe another way to ask it is, what would you, if you're an early adopter, you know, jump right in. But if you're not the first one to buy one, what would you need to see in order to feel safe, secure?
Fully connected is not a benefit for me. I can relate to certain benefits, but not fully. Just knowing my car was talking to somebody else doesn't fascinate me. Doesn't improve my life.
Yeah.
Now, if you said, you've got this kind of information now with this car, and it makes your driving more efficient, or improves your life in some fashion, then I can relate to that, and it's something I would consider buying.
So the tell me what information or what benefits you would want, John, to make it seem attractive to you.
Well, again, I'd like to know more about what I'm driving through at the time.
Safety?
Where the stores are, where the safety concerns are, where the charging infrastructure is, what the traffic conditions are, what's a better route than what I'm thinking about taking.
Okay.
Things like that. If I'm getting a lot better information and it, working in partnership with an intelligent car makes a lot of sense to me, but I've worked with enough failed computer systems that I'm not really excited about them taking over.
Let's assume it works, so just for the sake of this discussion. Quickly.
Yeah, sure.
Let's assume you had those features and the benefits that you wanted. Are you willing to pay for that?
Sure.
How much and how?
I would say about a 20 to 25% premium.
On top of the purchase price?
Okay. And I base that on what kind of premium did I go into an electric car? Mm-hmm. Essentially it was even more than that, but I thought it was a pretty valuable step to make, and so it was worth it to me.
Bob? Car that has these fully connected features can communicate with other cars, knows about traffic patterns, can suggest alternate routes, gives information about charging stations, weather conditions, whatever else you can imagine. That's sort of those features. Is that something that would be nice to have? Nice to have, and you pay for it. Nice to have, you pay a lot for it. Some.
No, I wouldn't pay a lot for it, and I don't think I'd be an early adopter. Now, we're not talking about a driverless car.
No. We'll take a step back from there right now.
But the kind of thing that would break if a car got too close or something like that. It's something I'd be interested in if it came standard and didn't have to pay a lot for it.
Okay. Molly?
Yeah, I mean, if it came standard, I'm not sure I would pay a lot for it.
Yeah. Are you paying for it when it comes standard, though?
Huh?
Are you paying...
Well, yes, you pay a higher amount, yes, because the car just goes up. But or if it was on every vehicle, and you saw prices go up, yeah. But like I said, having experienced it I wouldn't have said that probably prior, but having experienced driving with someone where the car has literally braked itself to stop three different accidents, or it dings when he's about to move over in a lane, and there's a car in his blind spot because he's an idiot, and it's like ding ding ding. He's like, oh crap, I can't move over. I literally can't count on one hand the number of times it's stopped an accident. So,
yeah.
Well, in reality, it's too bad he has that car, because you probably could have got a promotion.
a little workman's comp.
It's the hostile work environment.
So it just came up a little bit earlier in the discussion about information in connected cars have the ability to share information potentially either with each other or maybe to a larger system. And we talked about the government. We talked about Nissan or private folks having information. What information would be okay to share?
Well, I think it would be okay to share any information that, as long as it can be safely anonymized. Mm-hmm. And so anything that helps with planning, understanding where people are going, what they're doing, without really saying it's you, per se. I think that's something you really should do. Otherwise, you can't improve the system or the network without sharing that information.
Yeah, Bob.
That's what Google does already. Is when you agree to use the Maps app on your mobile device, you opt in to allowing them to send anonymized data to their servers so that they can have a better idea of traffic patterns. Mm-hmm.
driving has never been a right. It's always been a privilege. So you have to get a license and all these things. Walking is a right, but driving is a privilege. So I don't know if I'm too worried about the information collection. I'm more worried. I picked on Nissan, but Google's really the evil empire we have to watch out for. But yeah, it's important to gather data.
Bridget?
I was just going to say, I'm sorry, but his comment just reminded me about the Google app. Because I don't like to use apps because I don't like to have them in the car to look at them or be reliant upon them. It would be really neat if you could actually lock in your phone and have it project on that screen that's on there. The, you know, the one that we use for the backup camera, the, the map and everything like that. That would be a really great device so that you wouldn't be so distracted maybe by your phone or whatever. So that's that whole thing as far as the amount of information. So I'm a lawyer and my husband works for the federal government. So we would definitely not be early adopters, just probably from more from his aspect. But I'm always concerned about the amount of information that's out there. So
concerned, well, is there, when you think about driving, driving behavior, the information that might be shared from that, is there a particular type of information that concerns you more than others?
Well, right on par with the smartphone, right? You have a smartphone. So anything that, I liked your ideas, you know, anything that can make it more an anonymous process would be beneficial, but I also feel like it's a slippery slope, so.
Others? Steven?
I'm pretty clear on this. I don't have any issues about sharing. I do as much stuff as possible on my phone. I'll pay my mortgage. I'm like, I don't care. And it makes my, to me, it makes my life easier. It makes my life flow better. It makes my life more efficient. It makes my life more carefree. So, but I would not be an early adopter of that technology.
Okay.
Mostly because of cost.
Mostly because of cost, so.
I would wait until the sweet spot.
Okay. Okay. I'm just going to read the question that, that came in for me. If you had to replace the battery in your car, and you had a choice between the smaller size or the bigger size with more range, would you buy the bigger one? I think we're sort of getting it here. If you could replace the battery with the smaller size, probably smaller size with, that's less expensive, or bigger, more expensive with more range, what would be, sort of get at sort of that, those trade-offs between battery replacement, range and price.
I'd pay more.
You'd pay more?
Definitely.
Yeah. And what would you be looking for, Bob? What? How much more range would you get, and how much sort of in percentages, or how would you think about it in terms of what more you would pay in cost?
Well, I think about it. The next step up really for range is the Tesla, and that's, you know, 70 or 80 grand, and so I would. If getting an extra 50 miles cost $5,000, I would consider that a bargain.
For me, it would depend. If there was a vehicle that came out that was larger, I'd be more interested in getting rid of our Leaf, but when the battery came, to exchange it into a smaller battery, because my husband's commute is much shorter than mine, and I'm doing all sorts of carpooling stuff. It would be better for me to have a larger range in that vehicle that seated more people than in the other.
Yeah. Abdullah?
I would calculate, I'm a numbers guy, I'd calculate how much, because every time if I relied on public charging stations and it was a set price, like $7 to charge your car, and if I had a range of 100 miles and, you know, 60 miles, and if I gained 40 by upgrading to a larger battery, then that's 40% less time being or going to a charging station, so I might break even depending on how many times I use a public charging station.
Okay. Rick, got it in the head there?
Yeah, I'm a numbers guy too, I would mostly charge at home from my solar panels, so I haven't been doing the cost analysis, but I look at it like if by 2017, when I might think about replacing the car, I would hope that the next models have at least 25% more range, and I'd be like, the price of the new car, resale, or the trade-in value of the existing one, what am I really paying for that new range? I'd do the math. I would, but if they had something right now that could give me 25% more range, I might take it.
Even though you're only driving about 13 miles a week?
But I would do more of those occasional trips.
Okay.
the extended trips that are a little tedious to have to stop every 30 minutes to charge for 20, you know.
Okay.
So I would do that. I couldn't wait to get an electric car, but I wasn't willing to pay the Tesla price. So there is a place where I say, no, I'm not going to pay for that.
John?
I think it's curious, at the very least, that most electric cars that have come out that are fully electric have right around a 24-kilowatt battery and a range of 85 to 100 miles. I think that's a little bit strange. And I also think that if, you know, in 3 years, if Tesla makes good on their promise to come out with a $35,000 car that will go 200 miles, all of the other cars will move up to that level. And once you hit about 200 miles, I mean, that's enough to get you to Seattle, right? Generally speaking, with a charging infrastructure that's built around these 80-mile limit range cars, if now if you're able to go 200 miles, you're either not using those at all or you're using them very little. And, you know, at that point, you can talk about, you know, whether or not it's worth to go much beyond that. And for some people, it will be. But, I like what you said about we need to see trucks, we need to see pickups, we need to see vans that have a 200-mile range, you know, and then you've got an extremely viable alternative to electric cars. But I think, you know, paying extra, I don't think anybody in this room wouldn't mind paying some extra for a larger battery. But I really don't think we should be talking about going to, you know, 105 miles an hour range or 110. You know, I think it really has to, start at a minimum of 150 and, you know, the average be about 200.
One more question, and then I got a question with the rest of your day. Who here, raise your hand if your employer has a charging station. Anybody's employer have a charging station? Just one of you?
Not a charging station, but a place I can plug in.
Place that you can plug in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bill, you said you plug in when you get to work, right?
Yeah.
So who's your employer offers a place where you can at least plug in? Let me ask it that way.
They don't really offer it, I just take it.
Just take it. So most people, you know, they leave home with their car, they go to work, they come home, charging at home. Does the employer, what do you think, the employer have an obligation to provide charging, a nice benefit that they could offer employees as a perk for working there, something that they should charge their employees for? Talk to me a little bit before we go about that relationship between employers.
Employers offer transit passes, so it's kind of similar.
I think it's a fantastic idea. I think they should be encouraged with government incentives to do that. And I think it's, you know, there's a range of benefits that driving an electric offers, from, you know, environmental to cost savings to geopolitical ramifications. Where we send our military to protect our oil flow, you know, just, you know, in general. Well, I think probably the best indicator is that Oregon spends about $6 billion a year on fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. About 70% of that leaves the state. If we move to a more a system where the energy came from Oregon and was purchased in Oregon, we'd have a much stronger economy. So a lot of good reasons for that, I think.
Brian, any thoughts about it? You can take it from your employer. Does he know or does she know?
Yes, we know, and I'm in the management end of it, and so there's no secret about it, and I think it's a great benefit. I think it's good for the environment. I think that employers should encourage their workers to be environmentally responsible.
Who should pay for it?
I would be willing to pay for the electricity that I use. I wouldn't have a problem with that, just for the extreme convenience of being able to charge at work without any issues. I'd pay for the electricity gladly, but as a business owner, I would be happy to also give it to any employees that wanted to switch over to electric and help out the cause, if you will.
Okay. We're just about at 5:30. Any final comments about your experience with EVs? What do you like to see about connected cars? Anybody got some last thoughts that they want to leave the table with? Nobody? Rick?
Well, I'm still a little unclear on what fully is encompassed by connected cars.
Okay.
Safety features would be a lot more attractive to me than informational
okay.
sorts of things.
Okay, good. Good. All right, guys, you were fantastic. I've had an opportunity to do, I don't know, like a dozen focus groups on electric cars over the last couple of years, keep on learning, hearing what people's experiences are, what their hopes are. This is the first time I had a real chance to talk about these connected features. It was real helpful to me to learn what you think about them. I appreciate you coming down. You know what you were getting involved with, but you were a fantastic group. If you could just leave everything here, I'll clean up for you, and then make sure you see Allison on the way out because she's got some money for you. And I'll let you enjoy the rest of your day. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, John.
As a somewhat late arriver, should I?
No, you can leave it. I mean, if you have time to fill it out, that'd be fantastic, but right. It's not.
Send it back to you or something like that.
It was to help prompt our conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So do you have an electric car yourself yet?
No, I don't.
Oh,
I
you're
don't.
Missing out. It is a terrific vehicle.
You know, although I probably could Canada, I live, the challenge for me is I live in a condo building.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no infrastructure
that
there.
That is a problem. I think that kind of apartment buildings and that sort of thing should have to have accessibility.
Yeah, they probably could and they probably could build it down, but as it is for me living there now, it would be pretty difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard other people talk about, you have to go across the sidewalk or something like that. But there's, it would be easy to plumb something like that in.